I mean, I think that's why the Incredible Hulk has been such an enduring, like they always talk about how he feels good when he's the Hulk, but then he feels shitty later.
Yeah, he's like one of the most relatable characters, and he's a massive green monster.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, I get him.
And when he does that thing that he so doesn't want to do, he's so cool. He's just like, you're smashing helicopters out of the sky.
They made him mad. He's allowed to. Okay, so
record
the intro now.
So what is Milkless? Because I think we start with the name.
Two dads, we love our kids, but then we also need them to know that we're like pretty cool and it's not like a wimpy podcast. So, hey. Hey. Milkless.
Hey, welcome. Hey.
Hey, Milkless. Call the audience, Milkless. What's up, Milkless? Matt and Max coming at you.
What if that's it? That's our first take.
All right, on this episode, we are going to talk about your temper. Dad's got a temper. How do you deal with it? How do you still act the way you want to act, even when you're mad? How do you short-circuit those moments where you get so mad you do something you're embarrassed about? Because we all know we've done that. Then we'll talk about, is the goal even really to eliminate anger entirely? Or is there a place for it in a happy, healthy home? Here we go. Let's do it.
All right, thanks for joining us, everyone. So today we're talking about rage and frustration when you lose it as a parent. I think we just kind of clear the air and kind of let's just throw out either our low points or our dumbest points. Or like, Matt, what's the dumbest thing or worst thing you've ever said to your kid when you're angry?
Well, this is certainly not the worst thing, but it was one, in hindsight, I was like, this is one of the dumbest things I've ever said. So my daughter, she was like 2.5 and we were going hiking. And when she is interested and likes the hike, this girl can go for hours. But if she's not feeling it and it was a little hot that day, she will just like stop and say, my legs are tired, and she will not move. So one time this happened, we were like 15 minutes into a hike, and it was like we were off trail. I would like carrying her back was gonna be a whole thing. And so I just was trying to talk like, let's go.
Uh-oh.
I just get madder and madder and madder.
Uh-oh.
And then finally I take off my hat and I throw it on the ground like a baseball coach. And I say, we're losing our edge to a fucking 2.5-year-old.
Yeah.
This edge that she once had, we were losing it. We're losing our edge. And I meant it. When I said it, I really meant it right in that moment.
It's like I used to brag about you and your hiking ability. I'm done.
Well, and what I really want for my 2.5-year-old is to have like a hard edge.
Yeah.
You know, that's what she needs at this point in her
That's super docile compared to what I'm about to say about when I lost it one time. This is probably the worst thing I've done. Thankfully, the child was young and won't remember it. But let's go for that high watermark to really make people feel comfortable.
Gotta normalize the fuck ups.
Yeah.
Everybody
does it. So we were living in Amsterdam and we were, you know, doing sleep training of one of our kids. And, you know, I think he was, let's say 2.5. And he kept coming into our room and I was killing it. I was just doing so good because I'm the one who gets up in the middle of the night because I don't need as much sleep as my partner. So just, you know, pick up the, oh no, bud, we're going into bed. He's freaking out. I'm like, no, we're going to go back to bed. So just bring him into his bed. And we were literally doing the exact same thing. I'm not even exaggerating. Maybe 6 hours from 11 till 5 in the morning. I just kept doing it, taking him. Nope, bud, staying calm. But then something snapped in me. And I'm like, this is going to go on forever. And I did a fake phone call to the Amsterdam police. I'm like, okay. I give him one warning. I'm like, if you don't go in, I'm calling the police. I was at my wit's end. I had nothing left. I'm like, I'm calling the police. You want me to call the police? Watch. I'm calling the police. He's like, you think he called my bluff at 2.5? Kept going, freaking out. I'm like, okay, fine. Watch this. And I even waited. I'm like, yeah, is this the Amsterdam police? Hoi, yeah. Hoi, yeah. Mag ik Engels praten? Yeah. Yeah, my son? Yeah, he's here. Yep. Three years old.
He's an acting gig now.
Yeah, he won't go to sleep. Come pick him up. Take him to kid jail. Okay, and he's freaking out. He's like, no, I'll go to bed. I'm like, no, they're already coming. You're outside? Okay. And he ran back into his bed and he stayed at that point.
Oh my God.
But in retrospect.
Man, I got a buddy that told his daughter that they were going to have the doctor come look in her ears if she couldn't, because that was her biggest fear, was the thing sticking in the ear.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, for months, that got her to bed. I just told her the doctor would come look at her ears.
Yeah, no, listen, we lose it. We lose it, and people lose it. Like, for example, I said on the last podcast episode, I've hit the dining room table before. I've done it twice, actually. Hit the table really loud in an attempt to scare my kids. Yeah. I was so mad.
Moment, you're like, yeah.
In that moment, I hit the effing table like very hard and very loud. I was like, we don't do that in this home. Hit the table. It's like, in retrospect, like, what are you doing, guy?
And you can almost always take whatever line you said to your kids and apply it to yourself. My wife tells this story of stamping her foot on the floor as hard as she could and saying to our daughter, pull yourself together. And she was like, which clearly in that moment I was not. Like, I was talking to myself. It's like, yes, pull yourself together. What are you doing out there?
Yeah. So, Matt, why don't you frame it for us? So what are maybe some common triggers, and why do you think we do these things? And I don't think anyone really sets out with their game plan of fatherhood or parenting that, oh yeah, if my kid pushes my buttons, I'm gonna lose it on them today.
I thought I had no temper until I had kids. I hadn't gotten like really mad in a way that I acted in ways I really didn't want to. I hadn't been that mad in years. And then I had a kid. So you find your temper when you have a kid. There's a couple of things that get me going. One is what you were describing with the overnight. It's just the war of attrition.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to be calm. I'm going to be calm. I'm going to be calm. Just like, just shove down that rage. I'm going to keep behaving like I want to.
Serenity now.
Yeah, woosah. And one, your kid can sense that dissonance because they're so attuned. And then two, what that means is like when the dam breaks, there's a whole lot of water behind it.
Well, so then if you're aware of this, what are there any things that you do personally to, can you feel it coming?
Yeah. That's the weirdest thing, is to be like, I'm losing my shit. I'm going to lose my shit. Here it comes. And it's, there it is. It's so strange. So there's a couple of things, and I'm pretty shitty at doing one of them and decent at the other. The first thing is I've stopped really trying to hide if I'm getting frustrated. I try to articulate that to my kid as soon as it's happening. It's like they sense it anyways. As soon as I tell you like, oh man, I'm really starting to lose it. One, I buy myself a little more time before I lose it because I off gas a little bit. And two, now it's collaborative. She knows what's going on. She knows we're heading in the wrong direction. The other, and I'm so bad about this because I'm stubborn, but like tap out. You have to tap out with your partner.
Yeah.
I so often get in this place where it's like, no, I started this. I'm going to finish it. I'm like, my wife will text me like, do you want to swap and hold the baby? I'm like, no, I got this.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes later, I'm like, I'm not yelling. I'm just talking loudly. And this is going so fine. And then my wife will come in the room and she'll just hand me the baby. And I'll be like, thank you. I'm sorry. I don't.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird. In retrospect, you would have been able to see that in yourself.
Yeah.
If you were watching it third person.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, when you're in it, it's very hard to have that self-awareness in the moment.
Yeah. It feels like losing. It's like, I lost this one. Whereas really it's like, I have another parent. Wouldn't it be nicer to just hold a sleeping baby than to continue having it out with my 5-year-old?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, dude, there's always the it's so dumb how much this works, but if you take a deep breath, you feel better at the end of it. And it's annoying to me what a robot I am.
Yes.
Because like you're so angry and then you take a deep breath and you're less angry and you're like, but my anger was real. It's not like these are my feelings.
Anger kind of sometimes feels good because if you're in a stressful, frustrating situation, it feels kind of good to yell in that exact moment, which is kind of sick.
And it lowers your empathy, which makes things less complicated. You really just got to worry about yourself, not other people.
Yeah.
And I think that's why The Incredible Hulk has been such an enduring, like they always talk about how he feels good when he's the Hulk, but then he feels shitty later.
Yeah, he's like one of the most relatable characters and he's a massive green monster.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, yeah, I get him.
And when he does that thing that he so doesn't want to do, he's so cool. He's just like, you're smashing helicopters out of the sky.
They made him mad. He's allowed to.
What about you? What's one that gets you?
Well, it's not one because honestly, it's actually just me. When I am stressed,
is me.
Because anything will trigger me if I'm stressed, tired, and trying to do something. I try to do 30 minutes of work or something on my phone in the kitchen, and they just swarm me. They can sense, they smell the blood in the water that I'm trying to do my own thing. And my subconscious is basically saying, why don't these kids understand that I just gave them everything for the last few hours? I need to just do 30 fucking minutes. And then that's when I don't even realize it happens. And I'll say something, I'll lose it for a little bit. I'll be like, why can't you just give me a minute? Give me a minute. And then it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Why did dad just like...
out of nowhere.
Yeah, they didn't know what was going on. They didn't see that bubbling.
Yeah.
And it was entirely me because a stressful email came in and then I take it out on the kids.
There's two things going on. One is like the stress that you're feeling from an external source, but the other is that attempt at parental multitasking and distracted parenting, which is so hard to avoid because our world is a distracted world, but you are never at your best as a parent when you are also trying to accomplish something because kids slow everything down.
No, and it's stupid on my part. So the ways that I've been able to mitigate this is my wife is always just like, dude, go in the office. Like, I'm like, because she can see it bubbling. She's like, Max, go in the office. Go in the other room if you're going to do an email, you know? And that is a way to avoid it is just don't try to play a board game and answer an email. It's like, I know it's my turn. I'm going.
And it comes from a good place. You don't want to like exit the party and silo yourself away. But it, yeah, I do think in general in life, we lie to ourselves about how effective we are at multitasking. And parenting is so much that way. I mean, trying to write a work email and parent a child at the same time, that's not a thing.
Yeah.
That's just not a thing you can do.
100%. And so now to kind of frame it a little bit with some research here, I think this is going to be obvious. In a 2017 study, 82 couples with sons between 9 and 11, total anger expression with the father, like the father was showing, led almost tracked linearly with their son's emotional sensitivity and anxiety and also having negative peer relationships. So I think that's clear. And I think everyone would naturally think that. What's more interesting was a 2010 study about consistency. So even parents that show a lot of warmth and love, if the parents are inconsistent and kind of blow their top on people never really know what's coming, the youth development is weaker. There's weaker parental bonds and they actually fail to internalize pro-social norms. And pro-social norms are like voluntary behavior, to benefit another. So kindness, compassion, helping behaviors at school.
Being a good hang.
Yeah.
Pro-social equals being a good hang.
Yeah. This guy's chill. So like, what would you say about consistency?
It's tricky. And I don't think I always do this as well as I wish I did. I think a lot of times I use humor as the first indication that I'm starting to grow frustrated. I'll be like, baby, not cool, kiddo. But then as it ratchets up, she's like, wait a minute, a second ago, dad was being funny. And now it's not funny anymore.
There's a thing that maybe in your defense though, maybe that is consistency, that's your arc and you're showing that this is coming. I think that, but if it comes out of left field, I think if the kid can't predict that dad's about to get mad, I think that can create a very unstable environment because they don't really know what's coming. And that's why
it's not that you can't ever get mad. It's that like,
I'm not sure.
They need to know this thing makes dad mad, which goes back to the point you made earlier about how fraught it is. If you're bringing anxiety, frustration, stress in from the outside that they don't even know about, they don't know that your client's being a dick.
Right.
They just know dad's angry and I don't know why. Like I can't trace it to anything between us.
Yeah. And that's something I want to work into my sort of internal parenting plan that I don't really think about a lot is the consistency thing because I think that I can just nail it so much for so long and then I'm tired, but I'm stressed.
You
and then
do have to have patience for your own fallibility though. I mean, I think that's why I'm big on if I have a shitty day, the minute I walk in the door, I try to tell my daughter that I had a shitty day so that even though the factors that are making me less patient or whatever come from the outside, she at least knows they're there and understands them. You can explain it like, oh man, I'm trying to make this thing and this guy that I'm trying to make it with, he's not making his part of it. I'm making my part, but it sucks because his part sucks, but it makes me look dumb. So I'm mad and I'm sorry, but I'm probably not gonna be as patient tonight, but it's not because of you. And then you buy yourself a lot of room to then just be a little chippier, which you probably can't help anyways. Because I feel like just gritting my teeth and being like, but I'm not gonna take it out on her. It's like, well, Yeah, you will. You're a person. Like, you're going to be different if you had a bad day than you had a good day. Mm-hmm. So I think that communication can create some of that predictability that you're talking about.
Yeah. But also, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy that if you identify it and acknowledge it and say it out loud, it probably never blows.
It doesn't get you as bad. That's right.
Because you are acknowledging it and you'll probably take steps to mitigate it.
It also gets back to something we talked about in our first episode, which is consistently communicating to your kid that you have your own internal life. Who among us never feels anger? So if your kid never, ever, ever sees your anger, your kid never sees who you are. Exactly. At some point, you are hiding your internal emotional experience from them. And that's not the goal. The goal is to act in the way that you want to act.
And it teaches the kids maybe how to deal with, you know, a shitty day or anger or whatever, because they're modeling their behavior after us all the time. So how you handle those things, especially if you nail it, it shows them how to navigate that sort of thing.
How to move through anger, how to feel it. And then,
yeah. This episode is brought to you by Violet Archer and the Case of the Purple Martin. It's a chapter book with illustrations on every page. You can read it to them if they're 5-6 year olds, but then as soon as they can read up till 12, 13, it's an insanely good book with plot twists like worthy of an adult's attention. I love this thing. I'm so proud of Matt and Milkless of putting this thing out. So if you want to support Milkless and get an awesome book for your kids, it'd mean a whole lot to us if you bought it. Check the podcast description for the link to Amazon and buy it today. And if you already have it, you can pop back into Amazon and give us an honest review. Thanks.
My wife will do a thing sometimes where when she's just like, you know, she's just been pestered too many times and it's a little funny. It's also a little bit like, whoa, but she'll just go, ugh! And it's like a Hulk smash, right?
Yeah.
And even when sometimes my daughter doesn't like it very much, I think the reason it's okay is it's honest.
Yeah.
It's like right now how I feel is like,
George is losing it.
George is
not having a good time.
George is not having a good time. That's the safety valve. That's like the off gas. Do you know like that term off gassing? I think about that all the time.
Let the steam out.
Yeah.
Pressure cooker.
Well, yeah. Pressure cooker. Yeah. You got it. You got a little steam out. I do have, I want to ask you, this is one that I don't feel like I've figured out in any useful way. When my kid really hurts me, the part of my brain that is an ape reacts more quickly than the part of my brain that is a dad.
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
Well, like if they say something like horrible.
Not say, I mean physical. Like if they say something, I'm a big boy, I can usually get my feelings in check. But I'm talking about like your kid grabs a fistful of your beard. One of my worst moments as a parent ever was I was holding my daughter, she was young. She grabbed a fistful of beard and just yanked. And we had been having a bad night and it hurt so much. And before I even knew I'd done it, I just squeezed her. And for like a year after that, every once in a while, she'd just be like, just don't ever squeeze me really hard again. But I'd done it before I even knew that I had, you know what I mean? It was so fast.
If I get really injured, I'll probably yell out like a fuck or something.
Got it.
And then hit the ground, hold my head. But thankfully, like, and I think you're probably the same way. Like, I never get mad at them if it's an accident, obviously.
Yeah.
If it's like intentional, like, hey, stop playing with that rubber band, stop playing with that rubber band. And then they hit me in the eye. I might like a reptile yell out like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then it's like,
yeah.
And that was at them.
Yeah.
Cause that wasn't an accident.
Yeah.
And then it's just explaining, dude, so sorry for losing it there. But like, man, can you see why I did that? Like, so sorry.
That's not the way I wanted to respond. But also the thing that triggered it was not like, that's not okay. Yeah.
That's a tough one. When you fuck up, but so did they, but you fucked up harder.
Yeah. So yeah. Like, or I mean, even if they fucked up harder, it's like, you're more responsible because you're 39 and they're not.
Yeah.
That time that my daughter punched me in the balls and I slapped the wall, yelled fuck. Like before I even was making any choices about how I would respond, I had already done those things.
Yeah.
And then, you know, she burst into tears and I tried not to throw up for a little while. I mean, she really.
Oh, she took you down to
China. It was a good one. It was like she cleared the shaft and caught, so there didn't slow down at all and caught just balls. Oh,
it's one of those ones where you want it to hit the penis first to protect the balls.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Because it can take it a little more.
Yeah. It's more of a stinger than a.
Yeah.
You can taste it. Taste it in the balls.
But anyways, at the end of that, She was like, "Daddy, please don't ever do that again. That really scared me." And I was like, "I'm so sorry. I'll try not to ever do that again. But if you ever hit me in the balls as hard as you can again, I don't know what's going to happen."
But the ones where you kind of put a little stank on it, and we talked about it in the last episode, a bit of shame, where it's like, "Oh, so sorry for yelling and scaring you. So sorry. But like, you know, you see why I did that. Like you hit me. And, you know, what are you thinking there, buddy? Like,
yeah.
Come on." Like, it's like,
Yeah, right.
What type of person? Oh, no, not good.
Yeah, the physical pain is I feel like when I've had my biggest anger transgression, there's almost always been an element of physical pain involved.
Yeah. So I want to chat quickly about yelling, because there's a study we talked about in the last episode about a survey in 2004. Okay, so over 2,000 parents, young children aged 19 to 35 months, parents who claimed that they yelled a decent amount. It showed for child developmental risk just from yelling. And then in addition, lower parental emotional well-being associated with frequent yelling.
That's a tricky study for me, because I feel the same way about screen time. When we talk about screen time, it makes it all one thing. There's a difference between sitting and watching a nature documentary with your kid versus them having their nose in an iPad with their headphones on. There's a difference between saying, "Whoa," and saying, "What are you doing?" Like, they're both loud.
What if you're yelling something nice?
You're the best.
"Hey guys, I made your favorite dinner."
Yeah, right. Or like, do you remember the first episode of Sopranos when AJ figures out his grandma's not coming to his birthday dinner, and he goes, "What? No fucking ZD?" And all the adults just go, "Oh," hey. Like, to me, that's fine. Like, they do something, you're just like, "Hey, whoa, oh,
whoa."
So I think if you're really angry, that's what's scary. Volume often accompanies anger. But I've even had arguments with Laurel where she's like, "Why are you yelling?" I'm like, "I'm not yelling. I'm just talking louder than I normally talk."
That's a good point.
It's like, well, you're mad and it's scary. That's the point. I mean, there's times when I haven't gotten loud at all. It's more just the quiet growl.
Yeah. I guess it's more like naggy yelling, where you're trying to do discipline by yelling, I guess.
I don't think you want to use increased volume as a way to get compliance,
right,
or to get your point across. Because I think
that happens sometimes.
Yeah, sure. Well, you just get, you've been in an argument with your spouse. You suddenly find yourself talking louder than you normally talk.
I'm not yelling.
You're yelling. Colin, you are. Often when I yell, I feel like I've made a mistake, but I don't think about regulating my volume that much. What I think about more is how close am I to losing it? And I do think, actually, this is all anecdotal. I have no data to back this up, but I think there is a way, and my daughter has even articulated this to me, that when I get really angry, it's scarier than when mom gets really angry, because I got hair on my face and a deeper voice, and on some level, five-year-olds can sense that the majority of people who are in prison for violent crime in the world are fucking dudes.
Yeah.
Like, that we have that's in there.
Also, I would say, just again, not backed in data, but just gut feel, that mothers, like, they're more even keel.
That could just be our wives, because they're reasonable people and you and I are kind of.
True. Yeah.
But that's certainly, I think, the dynamic in both of our marriages.
I'd say my wife, like, maybe gets more mad more often, but mine are bigger.
Yeah.
Tsunamis. Like, dad's chill.
Well, she
dad's
may be
chill.
Off-gassing more too, right? She may be doing less of the like.
Like, I've never seen her like lose it.
I've seen my wife lose it.
But it's not on the scale. It's like junior varsity losing it.
I don't know. I have no objectivity on who loses it more, my wife or I, because I'm me and she's her.
Yeah.
But she has articulated to me getting to that point of so angry that she's just embarrassed by the way she behaved. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's scary to my daughters when I do that.
Well, also thinking about it, the time I hit the table, I did it twice, two times I hit the table. You're not like planning out how you're going to be a father in that moment. And it is a primal response. And in retrospect, if there was a video of it, I think that I am puffing out my chest and trying to make myself look bigger and scarier, mm-hmm, in a way. I'm not saying like, "Hey, stop doing that, kids." I'm like, "Hey," I actually deepen my voice.
Yeah.
I lean forward. I show them how big I am. you know, in retrospect,
yeah,
that's scary.
YouTube Shorts is a real fucking wormhole, and I like just watching crazy animal videos. And there's a video where these two apes are fighting, and then this silverback gorilla just runs in, grabs one of them, throws this huge ape so far, it's kind of amazing, and then just like puffs up his chest and stands in the middle. In our ape selves, that's how we maintain order. I'm the biggest one here. I can be louder, and I can just stop this from happening with my scariness.
Just think about how big we are, how much they look up to us, how much they love us, and how scary it is, one, for a massive mammal mm-hmm. that could literally annihilate them, mm-hmm. screaming or doing something that asserts our ape dominance. Yeah. You know, something scary like that.
We were talking last night at dinner about how much the baby weighed and how much my daughter weighed. And we're like, okay, so you weigh two of the baby. And then I was kind of doing the math in my head. And I was like, oh, I weigh four of you. Just imagine that someone who is about 14 feet tall and weighed, you know, 700 pounds.
And then also just the person that they look up to most, like their Michael Jordan.
Oh, bigger. I mean, they're Zeus, right? Like, First model of God, basically, is your parents.
Yeah, so then it's like a double whammy. One, maybe physical fear, like how big this animal is. But two, just like, oh my God, the thing that I love the most, like I just let them down and they're obviously in pain or mad or whatever. Just think about how scary that is from their perspective. You know,
that's now, such a good point.
You got to think about it, but then you also need to have that feedback loop of not like self-loathing as a parent, like, oh, I'm not a good dad or this or that.
Yeah.
Everybody, you know, steps out of line sometimes. Everyone does things that they didn't wish they had done.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings us into like apology. I mean, there was a study, it's about mothers, but it likely applies to fathers too. 177 mothers of school-aged children and a maternal proclivity to apologize. So like how often they would apologize or if they did it at all. I know some parents who just don't apologize. They see it as a sign of weakness. If they apologized, it was positively associated with involvement of the parent, positive parenting, and then again, child pro-social behaviors. Inversely, if they didn't get apologies, would have the opposite. So I think how you apologize is very important as a parent when you lose it. Because you're also teaching the kid how to model their behavior, you know, if they lose it.
Yeah, yeah. The repair is huge. Oh, one other thing, and we can kind of work this in wherever. So I remember early on, you were either married or you were on your way there, and we kind of all knew it. And we were young. You and your now wife got super liquored up.
As you do.
We all did. You weren't alone. And you two had this fucking, I was staying with you, and you all had this rip-roaring fight. And I remember being like, Jesus, any fight I've ever had with a girlfriend that went like that was the end of the relationship.
Yeah.
And the next morning, y'all woke up first. And then I woke up and came down. And I was like, God damn, I'm going to be waking up in a tense household. And you guys were dying laughing about this fight. And you were deconstructing it and making fun of yourselves. And I realized this is not dysfunction. This is just a higher conflict way of working through stuff. And I think on the other end of that spectrum, you get those people who are like, I'm fine. No, I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And like under the surface, they're just boiling. So I guess the question is like, is the goal really of an elimination of anger? Should that even be the goal? Or is there not a place for anger in every relationship, including the one you have with your kids?
That's a great question. I think that it's more that the goal has to be being chill. Like the goal can't be like, so it's Tuesday, so might as well fucking lose it today. But you just got to know that it is part of life to get angry and to get frustrated. And it's how you handle that, mm-hmm. how you work through the anger. Can you dissipate it? Can you let off the steam? How you do the post-game analysis, chatting about it. You know, that's one of the most annoying things to do is to unpack some kind of baggage, some things that were said, you know, but that is healing and that is catharsis. When you do step out of line, owning up, talking about how you messed up, and that is growth.
I do think as very few of us enjoy conflict. There's some people out there that do.
Yeah.
They're called people from New Jersey. Our good friend, he just likes to argue. He's wonderful. But he just like wants to get into it, and he's from New Jersey. Anyways, I remember one time I was giving my daughter a hard time about something, a harder time than she deserved, and I was expecting something of her. And she did this thing where she stood up on the bed and she clenched both of her fists. And I could tell she was scared because I was mad. And she just said to me, she's like, "That is not fair. I don't like that you're doing that." And what I realized is she was angry enough to stick up for herself, even though she was scared, because I wasn't being fair. And I was like, that's the point of anger. Anger can motivate you to stop avoiding conflict when it just needs to happen because somebody's not treating you fairly.
Yeah. Personally, though, the way I define anger is something that I never want to be. And that scale that you're talking about that your daughter was on, I would call that, like, on one hand, it's like it asserts to approach intensity.
Mm-hmm.
And then anger for me is when you start to kind of lose yourself a little bit, mm-hmm. and you might be deviating from who you want to be. Mm-hmm. So she was showing strength and power and intensity at standing up for herself. But anger, I guess just the way I define the word in my head is like when you are kind of
out of line, like
you're kind of flailing a little bit. And even if it's justified, anger is like, I don't know if it's a healthy thing. There's a way to be like intense and look up for justice and what's right. But anger to me is like when you're kind of like do stuff you don't want to do.
You can't stay there and act from there. I don't think it is like anger is not a long-term strategy. It's information. It tells you something. It can give you the chutzpah to take something head on, even if it's a little scary. But then, like, what do you do with that afterwards is, I think, a lot of what you're training your kids for.
Right.
It's making the distinction that the very act of feeling angry is not wrong. Woo!
It's tricky.
It's real easy. It's all real easy.
Brought to you by Violet Archer.